Welcome to Cambridge Stronger, where culture counts and values matter most. I'm your host, Amy Weber, and joining me today is Tracy Sugart, CEO of Premier Wealth Management. Thanks for joining me, Tracy.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited for everybody to hear your story. I feel like I say this every time, it's unique. And that's the beautiful thing about our industry is each one of us can have a unique journey into it and all end up like you and I, maybe staying here for a really long time. So let's jump in and talk about what your journey looked like. How did you make it to the financial services industry?
Okay, well, I graduated with an education degree back in 1989. I was going to be a teacher. But back at that time, you had to substitute and you didn't always get called out to substitute every day. So I took a part-time job at an insurance agency. And surprisingly, this is hard to believe, I was the computer guru there, which is beyond anything I could possibly do now. But Bob Pugliese actually worked there, and him and I did a lot of projects together. I helped him put together a lot of presentations, and we worked really well together. And then he left the agency, and he started his own investment business. And a few months later, he called me and asked me to join his firm as the office manager, and I did. A lot of people thought I was crazy because it was a brand new business, and I had little kids at the time, and they just thought I was nuts, but I did it. And then I worked for him for about a year, and he came to me and asked me if I wanted to get licensed, and he told me if I got all my licenses, he would make me a partner in the business, and I did. And the rest is history. So it was kind of a happy accident, and teaching obviously went by the wayside, but I can tell you that my teaching degree lends a lot more to what I do than any of the licensing courses I've taken. So,
Yeah, I think that's, so every journey is unique. However, I do run into an awful lot of people who have some sort of background in education. And teaching, and makes a big difference whether you're working with end clients or you're building a team like you have, or both, or the communication capabilities around teaching is just a really important component of our business. And in your case, having not used the degree officially is kind of a cool message too, because I think a lot of young people get hung up on that feeling that whatever they're majoring in, that must be what they have to do with their lives. And being able to leverage that somewhere else in a totally different way is just something they should keep in mind.
Well, I remember when I was in college, then one of the professors made the comment that 80% of us would not be teachers, that 80% of us would go in some other line of work. And at the time I remember thinking, well, that's crazy. That can't possibly be true. And here I am all these years later. So it is very true.
Yes, I totally agree. Well, we just touched a little bit on team. So let's take it a step further. You stepped in, you became a partner. And a key part of your journey, in my opinion, is how you were able to step into the shoes of the founder, of Bob. And what was that like? What kind of advice would you offer to somebody who was hoping and considering that they were the next in line? And what'd you do to prepare yourself?
Well, I can tell you, first of all, it was hard. My predecessor was quite a force. As you know, if anyone knows Bob, they know what I'm talking about there. And the reason Bob and I worked so well together was because we were so different. I'm much more introverted, and I tend to reflect and sit back and really think about what I want to say and what I want to do. And Bob tends to jump right in. So I really had to learn to step up more and not be sitting in the shadows. And in the beginning, I think I often felt underestimated because I stayed in the shadows so much. But I guess my advice would be, you're better at things than you think you are. I think when you're younger, you always think that other people are better at things than you are. And as I've gotten older, I've learned that that's not the case, that we're all kind of at times faking it. And at times we know more than we think we know. But it's been good. I really feel like I've gotten a lot confident than I was just a couple years ago. So it's been a good journey so far.
And wouldn't you say maybe one of the keys is also accepting that to be successful in a leadership role, you don't have to totally replicate the founder. You just have to know how to surround yourself with those other skills, right?
Exactly. And that was hard in the beginning. I think I did some things that because I felt that I had to be Bob, but I've learned that I don't have to be Bob. It's okay not to be Bob. And in some ways, I think there are things that are better because my personality is a lot different than his. They were good with him. It's been quite a journey, and it's been quite an awakening for me too. It's made me much more confident.
Yep. I've seen that. I totally agree with you, and congratulations on making that. I remember many, many years ago, you and I starting to talk about, I had the same, to some extent, a similar journey where I call it Inside Outside Leadership. That was a book. And we both had mentors that showed us the way that were, they were a force. We're just a different kind of force. And that's okay.
Yeah. Right. Yes. And I wasn't sure it was going to be okay in the beginning, but it's turned out to be really good. Sebastian's my business partner, and him and I work great together. We're all about the team, I think more so than we've ever been in the past. And my team here is absolutely the best team. It took us quite a while to get here, but, in the last 5 years, we've really built a great team. The business itself, just the business world itself has evolved so much in the last 5 years with COVID and the things that has changed in the way people do business, has been good for us, I think.
Let's dig more into that team. Talk about how you, over the last 5 years, that's a great segue, how you built it. How did you find people? What do the roles look like? What were some of the most important things you did to build that cohesiveness that you just described?
Well, for one thing, I think we opened, having remote employees was so taboo for so long, but COVID kind of pushed people into the whole remote thing. And we hired 2 remote employees. We have an employee in Iowa. We have an employee in Missouri. And honestly, I have a great team here in Harrisburg. But 2 of my best employees I've ever hired are sitting in Missouri and sitting in Iowa. And they do a phenomenal job. And we really embraced communication. We have a hard every Tuesday morning. We have a staff meeting. We all get on Zoom, share pain points, share ideas, share what's going on in everybody's week. And that's been great for just kind of pulling us all together. We also are committed to doing a quarterly staff meeting where we all get together. So we fly in Iowan, Missouri employees, and they come here. We all sit around a table and share ideas. We've gotten some of our best ideas from the team sharing, brainstorming. And then during the staff event, I think a big thing that's helped us build a great cohesive team is we always make it a point to do something social. We all go out for dinner together. We've done some volunteer projects. And it's just really melded us together. And I will tell you, we're much careful about hiring now than we've been in the past. We've actually used Cambridge for our last hire, and the young lady is just phenomenal. I just can't express how great my team is right now.
That's awesome. I think you're right. COVID pushed people into considering remote. By default, we had to do it. I do see a lot of financial professionals successfully doing it. On the other hand, now that we're on the other end of this, they're starting to worry that they're not engaging in the right way. So you've just given some really great tactical ideas. I think if you're going to embrace the remote team, the decentralization, if you will, that you have to put some of those tools in place where you're mandatorily meeting together, or people end up not acting like a team. You just have a bunch of silos. Would you agree with that?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That's why, you know, we've made it a point. It costs money to bring people in, to put them up in a hotel, to pay for their airline tickets and all that to get them here. But I'm telling you, it's really made a difference for us. I'd advise anyone to do that.
I have to believe, knowing how much your organization focuses on quality service, that some of this idea sharing that you're describing is around your service model. And how do you and the team ensure that you are continuing to provide first-rate service? What are the solutions and the tools that you use to make sure that you stay hyper-focused on that?
Well, I've really expressed to my entire team that that's our purpose. That's what an OSJ does. We provide service. So it's the whole purpose. And we're continually asking our reps what they want, what they need. I mean, obviously we can't provide everything, but we try to provide as much as possible. And like you said, our team meetings and our team events, that is always a topic of conversation. Every time we're getting together, I always send something out and we tell everybody, you know, we want you to come here with ideas, other ways we can provide service. That's a major part of our agenda. We sit around the table, we brainstorm. And like I said, some of the best ideas we've had have come from, you know, our team members.
What's an example of one of those?
For instance, we had a team member that we've been doing some client events here, and we do an annual meeting for all our advisors, and we feel like we really put together good meetings. So one of my team members said the one time we were together, why can't we do this for our advisors? Why can't we, you know, she said, I'd be happy to like brainstorm with our advisors on what kind of client event they want to put together. And I'll do all the legwork for them. I know how busy they are. So that's something we've put in place. If one of our advisors wants to do a client meeting, a client event, and they don't want to do all the legwork, Jody will jump in and do that for you. The other one is financial literacy. A lot of advisors want to provide financial literacy to their clients or to their clients' children, but they just don't have the bandwidth to do it or know how to even begin to do it. So we've put together a webinar series. And again, this came from Jody. Jody used to do Dave Ramsey courses, and she's put together a literacy program, and our advisors can invite their clients to be part of these webinars that we do for our clients here for financial literacy. So, you know, that's a great way to connect with the next generation of your clients. And it was an awesome idea. I didn't think of it. She thought of it. And the team just took it and ran with it and put the whole program together. It's awesome.
That's great. Well, you may not have thought of it, but they need leaders who allow them to spread their wings and fly. So you can take the credit for that. I know personally over the years that a lot of your responsibilities, both while Bob was engaged as well as now that you've taken the reins, is around compliance oversight. Lucky you. But how do you stay up on the regulatory environment? And maybe I should back up a second and just make sure the listeners understand. Let's talk a little bit before we go there about how many advisors do you serve?
About 70.
70 advisors.
70 to 80.
And Tracy runs one of Cambridge's enterprises. So those advisors are all with Cambridge, but they report, Tracy used the word OSJ. That's a pretty industry standard term that hopefully everybody understands. So let's come back to the question then. How do you stay up to date on this crazy regulatory environment that we're all facing?
Yeah, well, it's not easy. And again, I go back to the team. It's a team effort. So Christina Hollerin is our advisor liaison. She's our OSJ designee. And part of her job is to stay on top of any compliance news that's coming out of Cambridge, that's coming from regulators. She attends lots of different events and meetings, and she reports back to us what she's hearing. And obviously we all get emails from publications and FSI, and anything we see that we think is important, we share it around the group here. The team members all share it. It's always a topic of conversation at our team events. But the other thing too is we don't just keep it to the people that are doing compliance. We share those upheavals, regulatory messes with everyone in the, on the team, you know, the person who answers the phone, the person who's doing operations, they all need to know because reps call here. Sometimes they're upset. Sometimes they need to talk, be, you know, need someone to talk to and vent to, and they just need to know when they're doing any kind of task for advisors, what they need to know what they're allowed to do and what they're not allowed to do and what the latest thing is. So we share it team wide.
And how do you share with the advisors? So you said earlier, one of the notes that I made was that a lot of your role, almost all of it, is to service and serve those advisors that are with your organization. So 70 or 80 is not a small number. How do you build a communication with them to make sure not just potentially around the regulatory environment, but I'm sure that's a big one, but also you said that you ask them what they need and you try to deliver and that's what you brainstorm. Like, how is that two-way communication most effective for you and those advisors?
Well, we do a lot of communication with our advisors. Obviously, if there's something that's, you know, very new and very important, we send out bulletins. But honestly, the best way we share with them is we do two things. We have a monthly, what we call an info series call, we do every month with our advisors where, you know, we'll have a speaker on or there'll be the topic of the month that we talk about and we share. We also do quarterly calls. So we have a quarterly tech call where we just talk about new technology. We have a quarterly compliance call where we exclusively cover, you know, compliance topics. And then we do an admin call as well quarterly because, you know, the admins in the office are often the first line of defense. So we try to reach them. And then I also do a newsletter every month and I'll often put links in the newsletter for things like I call them friendly reminders, things that they need to be aware of and doing. And we try to highlight like the three most important things they need to be aware of and keeping on top of. So we really try to let them know what's coming so they don't get themselves in hot water.
And then you have your annual event as well, which I have to believe is important. I don't know, is it mandatory for them to attend or?
No, not really. It's not mandatory, although we usually get a good amount of them coming. I think, you know, some of these guys have been with the branch for 20 years, so, which is amazing. And they've become friends. They love to meet up and hang out. And, you know, we always have a big dinner on Thursday night. They golf on Thursday afternoon. We do axe throwing, but we also, you know, get together and talk about what's going on in the industry. We try to do a lot of peer to peer sharing. We also try to build in some, this year we're doing a CFP ethics event on Wednesday that they can come to. It's just a really great event. It's a really nice venue. We do it in Hershey Hotel, which is very nice. We always have a great time. It's a lot of work, but we have a great time.
That's great. I think that's really important, offering opportunities for them to collaborate.
Yes. The camaraderie is really nice in our group. We have some people that are really good friends that become friends through the enterprise. It's nice.
Yeah, that's awesome. Tracy, I'm going to shift gears a little bit. You were honored, congratulations, as a 2023 Spirit of Cambridge winner. For our listeners who might not be familiar with this honor, each year, two of our Cambridge associates, as well as three financial professionals, are voted on by the Cambridge associates to receive this award. And the fundamental criteria is really those advisors that financial professionals and or running organizations like Tracy, that our employees think really embody the Cambridge core values. So Tracy, what did this award mean to you?
Oh, it was awesome. It was really a nice surprise. I was very honored. It was very unexpected. But then, you know, naturally the one who hates to be in the forefront is told they have to do a video, which was kind of nerve wracking. But honestly, the team that came out here and filmed it, they were awesome. They made it painless. Hearing from my team and what they had to say was really humbling. It was just really nice. Honestly, the best part of that whole thing, though, was highlighting Bethany House. That's a charity that I'm involved in. It's very close to my heart. And to be able to share what they do, they actually help young women who are aging out of foster care and really have nowhere to go. To be able to highlight Bethany House was the best part of that. But the whole experience was just wonderful.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations again. And that's a great segue maybe to me asking. I know that Bethany House is near and dear to you, but you also mentioned earlier that the team sometimes does some projects together. So how important is it in your business to give back? And talk a little bit about your passion around that topic.
It is. We have several charities we support. I don't know if anyone knows, but Bob has a foundation. He has a grandson who has some issues, Russell Silver syndrome, autism, and he has a foundation, and we sponsor that every year. They have a big fundraising event every year. We sponsor that. We sponsor Bethany House. But the other thing we do is every year at our annual meeting, we pick a charity and we sponsor that charity and we raise money for the charity at our annual meeting. So that's kind of become a something we do every single year. And we usually reach out to the group and say, hey, you know, we've helped. There's people in our branch that have children that have issues, or they have a family member that has something going on, and we always try to sponsor them. So we've raised a lot of money over the years. It's a good feeling.
Great. Being able to give back and make a difference in people's lives. It's just nothing more special than that.
Yes.
All right, Tracy, you work hard. I know you do, but how do you spend your free time? You got a little tiny bit of free time somewhere once in a while, I think. And I like to make sure that the listeners know that we're not all work and no play. So what are your hobbies and interests? Where do you put your time when you're not working?
I have a few. So I never seem to have time to sit down and read anymore. So I've moved on to audiobooks. I have got about a 30, 40 minute commute every day. So I live on audiobooks. Gardening is my vice. I spend way too much money on plants every year, and it's becoming that time of year. So I'll be out in the yard, and I love that. That's a real escape for me. My son is a professional musician, so I'm attending a lot of live shows. Last year, I got to go to Amsterdam to see him play. That was amazing and very surreal. And then this grandbaby's coming, so I'm sure that's going to be a big hobby for me, as it will be for you too.
Yes, yes, so exciting! A great new chapter in our lives as grandmothers,
yeah.
Right?
I know, yeah.
So you talked about books. What book are you reading now, or what? Maybe two questions, if you're comfortable sharing. What are you reading now, and what's your favorite? What's one of your favorite books?
I'm right now listening to The Silent Patient, which is getting very exciting. I'm excited about that. I just listened to The Dutch House. Gosh, there's so many. I'm a big Stephen King fan. I tend to like mysteries and books that have kind of a twist at the end. And of course, what's near and dear to my heart is kind of corny, but Harry Potter, because my boys were Harry Potter guys, and I read all the Harry Potter books to my kids, so I would have to say, sorry, but Harry Potter is really a favorite of mine.
Hey, I think that's great. Again, we spend so much time working in our business and on our business that putting a little fantasy and fun into our lives is important.
Oh, it is. It truly is.
Tracy, let's wrap up with you. Let's say that we have some listeners out there who are trying to decide whether they want to be financial professionals in our business or run an organization the way that you do. What's the best advice for them in trying to figure out what the most successful path for themselves would be?
I would say not to get caught up in thinking that this business is, I always say this, about math and about numbers, because it's not. It's about relationships and being able to connect with people. And I think a lot of people, you know, they hear I'm in this industry and they think like I'm some kind of math genius, and, you know, and that's not the case. And I don't think that's what makes you successful at all. You know, you have to be able to communicate well. You have to be able to sit down and relate to people. And that's what's going to make you successful. You know, you could know all the alpha, beta options, blah, 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 blah. But that's not what's going to get you a client and keep you a client. So that would be my best advice.
Great advice. Great advice. Great way to wrap us up. Is there anything I should have asked you that you think is really important for the listeners to know about you, your business, building a business, that I didn't ask?
No, just that we are up and coming. Even 25 years later, I feel like we've got, you know, with Bob, the changeover, I feel like there's nowhere to go but up. So we're excited about what the future holds.
I totally agree with you. I've been really excited to watch this whole evolution, and I truly appreciate you letting Cambridge be a part of it. So thanks for the partnership, and you're a great representation of Cambridge Stronger. Thank you for joining me today.
Yes. 25 years, Amy. 25 years.
Happy work anniversary.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Cambridge Stronger. I invite you to listen to my podcast episodes where I have candid conversations with genuine, inspirational financial professionals and leaders within this fiercely independent financial services industry. The best of the best, the strongest of the strongest. You can listen to my podcast on Apple Podcast, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeartRadio, and the Podbean app.
We are Cambridge Stronger.